one makes choices, and that's the choice that I made, and it has advantages and disadvantages. It's hard to know what in some immediate way, whether those were good choices or bad.
Don't have to go in order.
Yes, yeah.
Steve, I'm looking at you.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't sure if we were doing. Okay. Well, there are a number of things. I mean, firstly, just one thing on your sort of reactions to your thing. I mean, I just wanted to share with you my feeling about it. I mean, I'll just put it fairly bluntly, and it's not intended to be anything other than a very friendly kind of feedback. I thought what you said was great. I really enjoyed it when I was typing away, you know. But I thought it was too long. I thought you gave yourself too long a time, and I would have preferred for you to have done the work of compressing it and selecting out the most important things, because I felt that's what I had done. You know, I had been very selective in what I was going to present. And in order to bring to them, if you like, the market of ideas, the best of my produce. And I think, you know, I'm sure you had a lot of produce to sell as well or to present. But I think that we would have benefited from the extra time, you know, for other things or general discussion. But also, overlaid with that, through yesterday, I was sort of very much preoccupied with a number of sort of practical issues, because for various reasons I felt that I was it had somehow fallen on my shoulders to concern myself about the practicalities of next year, and particularly, you know, making a funding application to the British Academy. And the practicalities are very particularly they're particularly kind of complex because, you know, because of the logistics of being here and getting back the day before the deadline, and the fact that there's only a certain amount of time to discuss with the people who I was discussing it, which is Susan and Tom and Max and yourself and anyone else who wanted to. But I was actually listening to your, one of the things that I was doing during your talk was to listen to it in order to find the right things to put down on some kind of summary a 1,000-page thing that has to go in the central part of it. 1,000 words.
Does that change?
It only seems like
and I haven't yet written it. Tom was very kindly said he had a go.
And I've sent you the previous letter.
And you sent the previous one, and I haven't had a chance to even. And, you know, but all those sorts of complexities that all sort of come in because, with all the best will in the world, we haven't managed to get much further with it. Before that. So that was dominating yesterday. That was a little bit of my reactions to yesterday. In terms of my sort of overall, just one very small thing, apart from that I thought it was great, and I particularly thought that there was some very good tight stuff happening on, the middle part of. In the middle, I thought it peaked on Thursday, actually. And then, about my own stuff, I was a bit disappointed that there wasn't more chance to do sort of musical exploration. And the one thing I'm taking away from it is to try to think of how to make that more planned and more focused. That's the kind of task for me. And which is something I'd really like to do, and maybe come back with some other ideas for any future. Not necessarily just here, but in our place.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, we can. I'm quite willing to go next, although I don't have a clue if I do go next what I'm going to say.
I wouldn't think that there should be an obligation to go.
And I was just going to say that, I think it's better not, because if you know you're going to come next, there's a tendency to kind of rehearse what you're going to say next rather than pay attention to what's been said. So I'm willing to go next, and if somebody else would rather go next, just fine.
So now everybody will be using it, I guess.
Well,
I might go next if you go away from me. I've been to many, many conferences on consciousness and organized many. And so I was actually reflecting a bit on, okay, what's this one doing? In what way is it a little bit different? And certain things do come to mind. I did enjoy the actual methodology bit. I thought Russ and Claire are doing important work, and that was worth exposing, and will make a contribution to the field in the long run, or potentially. Well, I think it will. I also liked the, there is a kind of openness that I felt. Many of us are theoretical, and okay, there is one reductionist here. He knows who he is, but even he's pretty open. And it was interesting to, for me, to have a chance to talk to other people who've been deeply thinking about ways of reconceptualizing our situation from a Western perspective, in a way that was sufficiently deep for it to at least potentially take hold in some way, and therefore to have the opportunity of really exploring, you know, where are they really coming from, you know, and is this stuff that I need to be hearing in order to maybe adapt my own views or not adapt my own views and so on. And even though I have to say at the end of the day I'm still a reflexive monist, which I haven't talked about. Yeah. You know, I mean, what I did with you is a little slice of something that's a consequence of my philosophical position. I haven't really talked about the philosophical position at all. I enjoyed the engagement. I really did. You know, obviously different people were doing different things, so some people were still working on their presentation, you know, kind of in the days before the actual meeting, and actually doing, I think, what you were doing, Jeff, which was to expose some ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was a legitimate thing to do, you know, because I think the group was of a kind that allowed for that. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't there to destroy anybody, we weren't there to pick holes in anybody. And I think a number of people were doing exactly that. And yeah, it can be a little bit painful when you realise for yourself that it isn't quite hanging together in the way that maybe you were hoping it would. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of useful to do, and all these things to happen, you know, particularly, you know, I was like, you know, okay, we're forced to take our shoes off.
Right.
Actually, if it had been warmer, the most enjoyable lecture I ever did was in bare feet.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, in India, yeah. You know, I just loved being mm-hmm. in bare feet,
mm-hmm.
because that really, you know, established kind of, yeah, and but it also established kind of contact, you know, from a barefoot position.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's more work. It's a pity that in a way Steve has to do what he's doing on the hoof, you know, great mm-hmm. speed and gallop, you know, in terms of working out what's going to go next, because I think it needs a bit of mulling over in a way, because I've been in the field a long time. The question always for me is what's worth doing next, you know. And my instinct is that there is something. One thing that I thought was missing, which would have been really interesting for me, would be to have, for example, someone who was learned in Buddhist philosophy, who was well acquainted with the issues that also concern us, and that was able to present it in a way, you know, in other words, an English speaker or someone mm-hmm. who could translate for them, mm-hmm. in a way that we could actually engage with mm-hmm. them, so that we could really understand where they were getting at. We were doing that with each other, but here we are in a big Buddhist center, and there wasn't a Buddhist philosopher. It's a big pity.
And I'm not even sure that happens in the Life Mind conferences. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't.
Yes. There is always somebody who is talking in the name of Buddhism, for instance, and anyone else.
I'm not talking about. Well, I suppose he's very good. I mean, I've spent quite a bit of time interacting with Alan.
Depends. He can speak Buddhism. He can also speak his own views.
Okay. Alan's a good guy.
There is also
like to hear it from a senior lama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of Alan's teachers, for example.
Yeah.
This. I've not had that. In fact, I've never met anyone of that kind, mm-hmm. able to do that kind of work with Westerners, personally. I'm not saying they don't, I'm assuming they do exist, and it would be great to see this, because, we know what we're talking about, and, on the assumption that they also know what they're talking about, it would be good to have a deep, deep engagement. This is part of the work that needs to be done.
I totally agree with that.
Sorry?
I totally agree with
that. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll pass on from there because it gets the guts of what I'm saying.
There is a Dread Lama not very far from here.
Exactly. It would have been great. I've had a little look at his book and I thought, I was already thinking, okay. But it would have needed him.
Right. And he's not familiar with this field. Would that be one of the criteria? I mean, he's not familiar with.
It doesn't matter. He's equated with experience.
Right.
Some of us also, right. I mean, there are obvious points of meeting,
mm-hmm.
and it would be lovely to hear how it looks from where he's sitting.
Right.
But not as a teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. As an exploration.
As an exploration. But I think he, for example, that's exactly what I picked up. That's why I bought the book.
Right.
It's exactly what I picked up from the book that he was doing that. He was looking at it as a form of exploration.
Yeah,
right. So if he was doing this, you'd definitely get me to come again. That's the kind of bottom line there.
Well, I would guess that between now and 2010, if you're thinking about planning a 2010 meeting here, I might have a chance to mention it to him. And it's not always easy to bring things up to him. But I would guess that opportunity.
Bring it up and let it go.
Let it go wherever it's going to go.
And I'm very, very puzzled as to bringing in the arrogance at this moment was like sudden confronting of a bad diagnosis for which you didn't have any indication before, so to say. So I didn't have any indication, so it was sort of surprising for me. But as I see it, I mean, you're not only offering hospitality, you have obviously also created this intellectual space for us. So you authored, in a way, the concept, and that's how I see it, and so I... For me, the role you had was sort of natural one. At the length of the presentation, one can discuss that this is actually a more technical thing, not worth of diagnosis of the sort, I think. So you said that you were like selfish, so if learning has to do with selfishness, then I was very selfish these days, but I'm happy that I was able to learn a lot from all of the participants.
In fact, this morning I prepared something that I wanted to say. The opportunity. It's about, I'm sorry, but it's about my own research. In fact, personally, I'm very convinced that I'm going to try to not read it anymore. In order to advance in the field of science of consciousness, of or research consciousness studies, one of the main ways it is to try to become conscious, describe and refine the process of becoming conscious of one's experience and describing one's experience. I'm very convinced that it is very important to try this very difficult task. It's very difficult to describe this process because it's not a process of acquiring new knowledge, but a process of abandoning all that we thought we knew, all that we knew or we thought we knew. And it's very difficult, but it's a very difficult task because it involves a careful description of the links, the relationships between experience and words, and words and concepts. Because as it is, as the goal is to describe an experience, the experience of description. And I think it's not sufficient to leave this yes, I think it's very important if we want to advance that we work at these two levels, and it's a task. This research is I feel it as difficult as the research in microphysics, for example. It involves a lot of skills, and it's not a research for one person. It's not. I cannot do it alone. But I was a little disappointed this week because I had the feeling that nobody wants to do that. Russ says that it's impossible. Jack and Urban say it's not useful and even dangerous. So I'm a little disappointed, and I had no real feedback from you, Christian, or Steve, and so I think we have no time, it's not the time to discuss this one, but if you have any idea about this project, who is in the project of Francisco Varela, it's a project he explained in the first step, in the introducing paper of the view from within. He explained exactly the project. If you have any idea, I would be glad to receive either by mail or any tracking, or if you know somebody who just would go in this direction, I would be very it would be very helpful for me.
I didn't engage too much with you in terms of giving you feedback on your specific exercises and presentation. We've had a very, very full schedule for you. And what I think I did say to you was that I think that I'm doing similar work, not from an empirical perspective, but from a philosophical perspective, into subjectivity, and that my book Radical Knowing, I think, intersects with your empirical research in a very, I think, potentially fruitful way. And so rather than try and take the time to summarize the contents of that book as feedback to your presentations and exercises, I suggested that we can meet afterwards and I could send you a copy of my book and I'll review your paper, and that dialogue is something I'm quite sure will continue after here, and I feel that
have a strong intuition and hope that there will be a lot of mutual benefit in that dialogue. I can learn a lot from and apply your empirical work to my work. It can inform my work, and hopefully there will be something in the work that I'm doing in this area of developing the science of consciousness, focusing on true intersubjectivity, not just exchange of words, but true subject-to-subject connection. To me, that's a fundamental requirement for the science of consciousness. And then the issue that I just touched on very, very briefly yesterday at the end of my talk is that that point that to be true scientists of consciousness or explorers of consciousness, we have to be willing to turn the beam of inquiry back on ourselves. And as soon as we do that, we're running the risk of discovering things about our own psyche that, for the most part, we might rather not, at least initially, want to be exposed to. So we have to do that work, I believe, to be truly effective in this domain. And I think your work in the way to you don't talk about it with this therapy, but I think it has real psychotherapeutic potential.
I think I have a different sense with respect to those people, because really when I came here, I didn't expect at all my work to be the center of anything, just because it was absurdly I even felt that I was wondering what I was coming to do here, because my own view of experience, I would say, is essentially a third person view of first person experience. So my idea was rather that the type of method which is advocated and practiced by Claire would and should be the center of such kind of conference, because clearly we have everything we need. We have at least one good example besides Russell, first of all, and the process of evocation, which is really a process which is well defined, of getting someone to reach a certain level in which they say, oh yes, I'm living it. And then a second stratum, which is a method, a systematic method for exploring this, first of all, of maintaining this experience and exploring it under every possible angle. And thirdly, and most importantly, there is also a technique of putting that into words, which means that in order to do that, we have to find proper categories. Mm-hmm. And so there is all the complete apparatus of what is needed in order to do that. So I was a little bit surprised that only, I would say, Claire and Russ are really doing that in such a conference. I would have expected to be alone, almost alone, as a sort of philosopher, theoretical philosopher. So I think if there is a future conferences, I think it would be good to ensure that, at least half of the participants are practitioners of methods which are quite of the type that Claire and Russ are practicing.
That is an interesting, what Russ just said, I think is actually right. There are not very many people. Now, I always like to think that I'm moving at least in that direction, and I'm sure Urban feels exactly the same way. I also, for the reasons I talked about yesterday, I think I would agree with you that Claire and Russ have done a lot of work in this field, that are definitely in advance, you could say, of developing a body of knowledge grounded in first-person methodology. I think that's absolutely right. I can only think of one other person. I mean, there are probably colleagues of yours who would come, but you know, if we say, let's have people who represent all the many different approaches to doing this, they're like that.
That's true. Although if you talk, Erdogan was talking a lot about qualitative analysis.
Right.
And if you kind of open it to that,
mm-hmm.
then you've got a very large field.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing it in quite the way it's generically related. So yeah. You know, a lot of people are looking, as I said, in terms of what it's like to be in different situations and
mm-hmm.
finding ways of building theoretical structures on that,
mm-hmm.
not the precise investigation. You know, the focusing on the zooming, it's a little bit like, you know, these two have got a microscope. Having to jack up the amplification on the microscope, and there really isn't a lot of that.
Gender community, I think, is very close to us.
These two will know. you will know.
Just to put myself, I mean, I consider myself an empiricist in this field too, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
In the methodology of Bowman dialogue, which is something for some other time we get together, I'd like to propose that we might include that, a version of that in one of our sessions, that we need to schedule 2.5-3 hours for one of those at least.
What about traditional Husserlian phenomenology?
Hmm.
Lots of my colleagues are very hardcore phenomenologists, but my faculty work a lot with this Heideggerian wing in Germany, and I really try to. I'm good friends with some of them, but there is absolutely no scientific connection to them. I never noticed that one of them a hint of phenomenological reduction in what they do, and they write really huge volumes. So I'm really sorry about that, but I don't think that.
Yeah, there are no methods for describing. They describe it, but don't describe the way they describe it.
In Merleau-Ponty, there was more investigation of the method of how one goes about making aspects of experience become more sitting. I'm out of my depth here. I don't know what I'm talking about really, but at least from as an outsider, I thought that there was expertise there, but maybe nobody practices it anymore. Maybe Merleau-Ponty did it, maybe Husserl did it, as Michel seems to have evidence for, but all of their students don't actually do what they did. They only document the written works that these people produced instead of actually doing the same things that they do. Is that right? Do you think?
Essentially, right. Except for some people, quite isolated.
Just to mention that there's a woman up the coast that I've been trying to get to come here for quite a while. By the coast, I mean Oregon. So quite a ways up. Betsy Benke, Elizabeth Benke. I don't know if any of you know her work, but she is. She does what she calls applied phenomenology, and we read a lot of her stuff. She's worked with Don Johnson, who you may know. Don's another possibility. I actually talked to him about
somatic approach.
Yeah, somatic approach, basically. And it was interesting, but when I invited her, she basically said, "Well, at least at this point in my career, I'm more interested in working with people who share my own presuppositions."
Mm-hmm. But if Maxine had come, we would have had another perspective. She does some practice as well. Mm-hmm. It's not in any way like Russell's or Kerr's, but it's a somatic sort of.
Even in the course of what we've been talking about, various people, in fact, even now in the feedback, various people have talked about different ways of working with experiences. If you like, the systematic description of experience in the moment is one project. Many people are working with experience in powerful ways without having that as their aim. So as soon as you get into the business of the transformation of experience, for example, or even examination of experience without description, which is, I think, possibly where you were wanting to move to,
mm-hmm.
You are also raising very interesting issues, and it, they all feed into a kind of panoply of ways of understanding or working with experience. And as soon as you open it up that way, then there are many sources, both east and west, of people who are skilled at getting people to focus on what's happening for them,
mm-hmm.
and working with it in an interesting way. Again, you know, on the eastern side, you know, it would be in. I mean, Alan's pretty good, for example, in being very clean
mm-hmm.
about what you should be doing
mm-hmm.
in, you know, moving to this state or that state. So that kind of the feed in would be quite good. I mean, he's talking about attention, basically, and mm-hmm. things that you do with attention. But there must be people that you know, I'm sure you all know people who, in one way or another, have a special skill here. So,
yes.
quite a wide range of if you just open it up, it's not to minimize this project, but this is one important aspect.
Oh, no,
first-person science.
Mm-hmm. It raises an interesting question for me, and I don't think we need to discuss it in any detail now, but sometimes I have thought that, you know, on the basis of these conferences, that really what you would need to do at some point is have a more intensive program, something like a kind of a summer session, like a month-long program, where you had people, where you could really go intensively into some of these methods, because, you know, although we made an effort in this program, I think it was very helpful to give people some time and over the course of several days and really to go into it. I think it's quite obvious to everybody that we're only scratching the surface. I would love to see that happen, but I don't think together anytime really soon.
Well, one condition, it has to be in Dharamsala. You can be there for a month.
You want to settle for Rockmelon?
I would, yes. One thing I thought was, I had lots of reactions and very glad to be here and thanks, sir, but just while we're just in response to the discussion so far, I'm the other way. I think it would be, for my selfish interests, what I'd rather do is take some concrete, like we did, one or two concrete examples of techniques, and instead of engaging those techniques enough until we have an idea of what they are, so not just reading about them but actually doing them, but then once we have that experience, then trying to see, okay, what can be done with this, to what extent does it give you scientific knowledge of consciousness, how can you use it for scientific purposes. It would be like, the analogy would be like wondering how we should, you know, let's see, had a conference on modern physics, and they were, you know, trying to confront some of the problems of modern physics, and you spend most of the time collecting cyclotron data. Yes, it's good to be in touch with collecting the data, and it's good for every theoretician to know what it's like to collect that data, but once you've got that idea, there's also a lot of problems to be solved that say, okay, suppose we had all the data we want to get, now what would we do with it? I don't think they're entirely independent, don't get me wrong, but for my purposes, the balance here was just about right, and it would be less interesting to me if more and more time were spent collecting personal experiential data instead of figuring out, okay, what are we going to do with all this, all these reports and interactions. So the kind of understanding of consciousness I want is not just a personal transformational aha understanding, that's part of it, but I also want to have an intersubjective scientific, I want to have impact on theory, and I want to, there are a lot of people out there who think, you know, think there are big problems about how could you ever have a science based on this, these kind of things. And that's the kind of bridge I'd like to, I mean, they're, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the other activities are not of value in a conference or a meeting where it's entirely focused on the experiential or 50-50 or whatever, that that wouldn't be of value too. But if I'm having my wish list for my personal selfish interest, it would be about this balance, only more intense critical investigation of, okay, now what's the output of this process and how can we use it for other purposes? And we saw some examples of that, say clinical purposes, personal transformational purposes, counseling purposes. That those are fine, but what about theoretical or scientific, in the most narrow sense of scientific? But what's great about this meeting is that you actually have the people who are experienced in the collection of the techniques, and you also have the collection of the data, the performance of the technique at the meeting. That's very unusual, and just for the kind of thing life. And so, I think that's a very positive aspect of these meetings.
For me, the idea would be not to have on one side the data and on the other side a reflection of the kind of you explained. What are we not going to do with this data, but a really reflection anchored in this experience. Because we have a lot of preconceptions about a lot of things, and if we link, if we thought is anchored in this experiencing, I think it will change a lot.
I agree.
You know, the first thing that people say when they hear about, say, Claire's method or any other method, they immediately say, oh no, that's not possible, or it's not objective, or anything like that. But when they have spent 3 days practicing it, I think they change. Mm-hmm. Change their mind about the mistakes.
But the question is, can we make that? Can we now look back and, after that experience, start to make that explicit, or be able to, can we communicate that to someone else, or is it something that cannot be communicated? Is it something that can we say to other people, here are the ways in which my experience was transformed, I can now see I had these preconceptions, I can now see that they were grounded, or is it we just have to say, sorry, you just have to try it? And I'm hoping for something more on the side of we can start articulating the ways in which the people who argued or claimed about trying it, that it was not objective, why they're wrong. Say, well, you just don't understand. Here's, you're missing this point about objectivity, or you're missing this point about reproducibility. And then we can, that's the kind of thing I would like to see personally. I'm not saying everybody should do that. It's just what I'm interested in.
So, Claire was before.
I think we can tell it, yes, these are our reasons, but give people the way to reproduce the treatment. That's the reasons why I think it's so important to describe the process of destruction, because if we just say, yes, look, what we found about experience and write the nice reports, it's not interesting. If the scientific approach is to give the way to verify, it's a very Buddhist approach, in fact, to verify this description. And in order to do that, we have to explain the way. If you do that and that and that, maybe you. Verify if you find the same.
That's not entirely my point. What do you do with the description after you've got it? Some descriptions, I was thinking with Max, maybe the first or second day, that some some ways of characterizing phenomena. I'm not just talking about phenomenology, I'm talking about any science. Some ways of characterizing the thing you're trying to explain are useful for generalizations and some are not. An extreme example would be given by Zdravko's supervisor's new rule of induction. But anyway, so some properties, some ways of describing the world are not going to be useful for the purposes of science, even though they're true. And some are. So what I'd like to do is say, okay, so now I have undergone this experience. I now see that this is a very good description of people's experience. And I can verify it, and I know the method, and I've experienced it. Now, what do I do with what I've got a notebook here? I've got a form filled out. What does that, how do I now use that to start making generalizations about experience? So I'm not just interested in the task of describing experience. I'm interested in that for the purposes of having a scientific understanding of experience, not just a personal understanding.
Okay, so
not just structure, that's not enough. Generic structure, that's the beginning.
Hang on. I'm not pretending to respond for Claire, but I might be able to help in terms of how I see what forms that in terms of the areas in which we work, for example. So to me, I see both Russell's work and Claire's work at one level in the broad spectrum of qualitative analysis. But they're very specific techniques. So all these methods that people are actually using, you know, in many practical situations. It's as somebody, as Urban pointed out, if you go into health studies, you won't find a nurse doing quantitative analysis. It's very hard to get, you know, they're all doing qualitative analysis, you know, what it's like to be in this situation, how it is for the patient, you know, how we're going to change our methods of operating, you know, depending on, you know, what it's like to be in that situation, how we can improve what it's like to be in this situation. This is a field which, by and large, is unknown to philosophers. The, you know, particularly those who are worried about even going there, the whole bunches of people, education, health, who hardly do anything else, and these guys are doing something much more precise. And then you can say, well, for what particular kind of purposes do you want to do this kind of work? But the first time I ever came across Claire's work was actually with exactly the kind of project that you're asking for, where she was looking at the very precise experiences that came just before having an intuition. What I was a bit struck by is that she actually kind of got the precise movement of thought or pre-thought so well refined that you could actually get to the point are saying, well, could we actually create those conditions in somebody else in order to foster the having of intuitions? Mm-hmm. Now, whether in fact you can or not, you know, that becomes the research question. But it seemed to be an example of precisely the sort of thing you're asking.
Yeah, exactly. And I haven't made my point clear if I said that this isn't possible. And I obviously think it is possible. Now, I'm more familiar with Russ's techniques, so I can give an example. I mean, Russ and I have these discussions after hours every day, so I just wish the kind of discussions we had were the kind of discussions going on here. But anyway, so he gave me examples from his own work where, you know, if you do an analysis of 18 normals and you get certain kind of reports, and you do an analysis of 18 bulimics and you get a certain kind of report, and there's a statistically significant difference between them, then you now might have, you've made a generalization there. Maybe you could say, well, maybe in general, bulimics tend to have, well, a greater chance of having multiple experiences at the same time rather than normals. And therefore, maybe we can suggest treatment because of it. That would be the application side of the science, but there is a scientific generalization there. I'm not saying these approaches don't lead to that. What I wanted to do is see more of that, see more in what ways are these reports, how can we analyze them and get scientific generalizations out of them? That was the kind of the piece of the jigsaw that was missing for me personally. Other people might see it, think it's obvious, and therefore they don't need that piece is there for them. But for me, that piece was missing, and that's where I think a lot of the people who are skeptical about the first-person approach think that they think you won't be able to put that missing piece in. They think that there's a lack of reproducibility. The subjectivity means you won't be able to make these these generalizations. And so when, in fact, you go out and do them, right, you've done with intuition and stresses them with various things, including it then I think that's where people will start, like me and other people, will sit up and pay attention and say, oh, okay, you can't have a sign to this.
Let's look at time for a moment. Yes. Russ was the next to speak. No, he actually didn't have his hand up first. No, even before that, he did. And then Urban, and then Susan, I think. But we are about...
The point will pass because it was a point in relation to...
Okay. Well, it will... But we are... And we have 20 minutes left in this discussion period.
That's
right. So, and then there's lunch, of course. We will continue with some of these points. But I suppose we should spend at least 10 minutes talking about where we go from here. Is that true?
Yeah,
And we still have this issue. There are a couple of people who haven't expressed their kind of overall reaction. So can I suggest that it be Russ and then Urban and then the overall reactions and then the 10?
I will do the overall reaction.
Okay.
So in response to Ron,
okay.
I think that would be a desirable thing to do. In the couple and a half hours that were allotted to me, I elected to do the experiential stuff and not talk about that thing. On the possibility that if you all had a taste of the experiential thing, you could read about what I have done and then understand it, but not necessarily the other way around. And you can read my papers.
No, I agree. That was, you made the right decision because what makes this meeting special is that there is the experiential aspect. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have to choose between them, then yes, choose the experiential. But it'd be nice to have both. Yeah, and we did have both, but I think that's
okay. Okay. So,
having heard Russ in 2006, and then we'd organized people come to CEP, I'd actually suggested to Russ that this was a bit of a jigsaw for me that was really very exciting, was the bit about how it moves over into scientific work, and I recommended him or asked if it was possible when he came to Oxford, if he would do some of the experiential stuff, but then tell us about the clinical studies, because I think that's where it really begins to build those bridges, and that worked, I think, very well in Oxford. And certainly Steve said it was the best presentation that I had in Oxford. So it did work very well, and I'd hope more time would have been, because I had more time to hear more about people like Fran, which is, I think that's really exciting.
We needed more time.
Yes. That, may I just say, in relation to that, sorry, you're there, just that when Michelle earlier on said we need to have an equal number of theorists, equal number of practitioners, then we would need a long time, because I think this year I understood Claire's work. Last year I didn't understand Claire's work and went away and read. And I think the reading, of course, helps in understanding. But this year we had an opportunity to really experience it. But if we have an equal number, we would need how many weeks?
Give more time to the techniques you're focusing on rather than have too many techniques at once.
Right, that does seem to me to make sense.
Yeah, okay, so
general reaction.
First I'm going to respond to this. I would just like to respond to Ron. Being physicist, it's not quite like you said. It's not like they go and measure the, let's say, SIR, and they data, and they say, let's see what we can do with that now,
Yeah.
And the other thing that is definitely not happening in physics is that it would be like half of the philosophers and half of, let's say, practitioners or physicists, and then philosopher, let's say the main philosopher would say, oh, well, there is a place for your stuff in the field, that would not happen, philosophers are, me being one, sort of in the middle, totally grateful if they are invited to, let's say, physicist big conferences or something like that, and they would never dream of saying, no, I don't think that's okay, because my theory doesn't, it's Hegelian way, so if nature doesn't agree with my theory, so much worse for the nature.
I'm thinking philosophers versus experimentalists, I'm thinking theoreticians versus experimentalists.
Exactly,
so,
that's different, that's exactly the point. That's a huge trouble for philosophy. I know I'm some sort of philosophy is like somehow was for the last 2,000 years was, you know, the field of philosophy was like squeezed, you know, that physicists and chemists and biologists and everybody took their philosophy's ground. So, and this is sort of the last ground that philosophy stands. And now this is like, I see this week as something, you know, there is no connection, you know, because philosophy is self-adequate. And don't really know, the philosophers don't really know what to do with the data, you know. And I don't think this is the correct way to do it. It's, the data is first in science, not in philosophy, but in science there might be, although this guy says there is no such data, it's first-person data, but I don't know. So probably it would be really interesting for me to ground, as Claire said, to ground all these philosophical claims with the data. That might be a real progress if we could bridge this gap.
That's exactly what I want.
So I will just add my personal, although I had my moment of personal revelation yesterday. Actually, I would just add to that. I would say that perhaps one of the common things was that there weren't many people, actually just one, that came to me and said, well, this project of yours or whatever, although I know it was quite confused because I wanted to say so many things, but there were quite a number of people came to me afterwards and said, I know how you feel. I feel the same way. Or I know how, I feel invisible. And Ross didn't come to me, but he said now, and so on. So that's perhaps sort of, let's say, I felt that, or perhaps it's just my projection, I don't know, but this reminds me to a Slovenian dolphin research situation. In Slovenia, we have like 42 kilometers, it's like 30 miles of sea of coast, and there are probably 5 dolphins there. And we have 3 societies that research dolphins, and they hate each other. You know, they know their method is the right one, and they will protect the dolphins. And I think it's so harmful to, you know, that's why I actually was hurt. I actually don't think I'm doing a lot of good stuff, so it's better for me to not get mentioned in all these debates. But if, I mean, if you are doing your stuff and you don't mention me, who I'm probably the only guy in the world that pretty much agrees with you, that's dangerous, you know, that's dangerous. And if you two guys are not cooperating, I think that's stupid, that's quite stupid. We should somehow...
you say it as it is, you go for it.
We should somehow... That was the only reason why I did that map. I wanted to put all of us on the map and have this map somewhere, and then we'll say, okay, I'm here. I think there is much more, there are many more ways how to go into this detailed research, trying to be objective, trying to not to be objective, whatever. But there are so many ways, and I think we should just have this map and say, oh, I'm here, and somehow slowly feel the experiential, let's say, landscape or something. That's all I want to say. And by the way, Claire, I never said it's dangerous what you do. That's, I have no idea where you got that. You know that probably. I would really like to see all of this approach, and that was the eye opener last year for me. I also thought that's what we do, me and Matej, that's it, you know, that's it. And it's, you know, we finally discovered the problem, and we solved it by abandoning most of our scientific ideas, and that's it. Well, now we're going on here. But when I saw Ross and Claire and all this, no, that's totally not it. And I'm probably doing, in my experimental, I do a lot of experiments recently because I had this huge crisis after being a physicist and then doing just philosophy. Sometimes I felt I have to get my hands wet. So I do much more of very similar work as you do than I do this first person, really first person stuff. So I don't feel it's dangerous when I do it. So, and I would really like us to start building a sort of map that doesn't have to be like that, but somehow putting all of us, and also philosophers, putting on this map to see really the value of all our approaches. If we just say, oh, I wasn't seen, you know, this sort of stuff, then we'll just be like, what, 30 of us, perhaps 40 of us doing this in the world. That's just not the critical mass enough for getting somewhere.
So just to follow up on that, I just have an intuition or an insight, I'm not sure which, in response to that, and a suggestion to make for maybe a project or a theme for the next time this group meets, is to, I would invite Urban to develop his map, and probably try and develop some visual format to go with it, and then to place each other, ourselves, in as best we can on that map, as a starting point for the conference, and then look, how can that map be used as a framework for real dialogue about how we can understand and integrate and learn from each other's positions, rather than, as often happens at conferences, we come, we have a great time, interpersonal time together, we share ideas, and there's just a kind of an accidental osmosis of each other's perspective, but to actually focus intentionally on using the time together to cross-fertilize and to see how each person's contribution can be incorporated and integrated and develop the other's work. So I haven't quite formulated it as clear as I would like, but something like that.
Well, I think that that's really a very interesting idea, and it strikes me maybe it could be done between conferences.
Yeah.
Some work could be done. You know?
Yeah.
And maybe at lunch we can, you know, we could, those tables reconfigure, maybe we could have one big table at lunch and at least discuss a little more. But I do think we should hear from Susan, who's the only one who hasn't given her... Madeline,
you want to go first? I've been hoping to get out of this quietly.
Well, I think I've said to Radish, I came last year, and I thought this year, you know, as a sort of participant observer to use a sociological term, it seems to me that the debate is getting, the discussion has been getting tighter, in that, you know, you're beginning to develop a real sort of shared consciousness, if you like, of what each other is, what each other is are doing, and what, you know, the angle that you're approaching consciousness from. And like, I thought our band's comment was really very, very much the way I see it, I suppose. I mean, my training as a phenomenological sociologist was that you have to develop grounded theory. And we were taught to go from empirical research to modelling to theory and back down again all the time as an iterative process. So, but nevertheless, to recognise the importance of the disciplines which lie in empirical research and in theoretical research, because actually any one of us can't just suddenly come along and do what Buss or Claire has been doing. We have to be, you know, rigorous in that. And this the process of deriving our models of reality and theory from empirical research is a rigorous process, as empirical research is a rigorous process, and pure theory, pure abstraction is a rigorous process. So we were taught those methodologies, and it was very exciting. I mean, I found the whole thing, you know, doing that sort of research very, very exciting. So I think I see within this community here the capacity for people to be able to start. Probably some of you are, I don't know all your work, but to do that, to develop what I call grounded theory. And grounded theory can be equally grounded in, you know, research when the subject is the object of its own research. So the sort of exploring the structure of consciousness and reality as, you know, using the techniques to deepen one's awareness. And so I see both the methodology of that and the empirical and this sort of empirical research as equally valid, provided it's rigorous. So I see this developing. It's very exciting and I'm very honoured to be on the edges of that and seeing you doing it. I'm beginning to think, oh, maybe when I retire I might be able to start working in this area. But I think the other thing is that to be clear that you know, when we use the term science, it means a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And the battle that we sociologists had in the 60s and 70s was precisely that the sort of research you're doing, or say participant observation, those of us who were trained to be empirical as well as theoretical didn't see a problem, but a lot of scientists said this isn't objective, this isn't science. So we had to fight that battle, and we fought it with more or less success by showing that using rigour and discipline you can get as close to what scientists would call objective as possible. And just with more or less success, we fought that battle. So I think that battle probably remains, and those issues are in the middle of the room between you all. It's all part of your developing shared consciousness. So I thought this time, if you're looking at consciousness, you're definitely developing, and it's a shared one.
Actually, in consciousness.
and I think it feels a little bit sometimes like observing a sort of Greek philosophers at work. You could walk around the corner and see a group of people sort of like this, and you sort of get on the edge of it and then go somewhere else. And there's
maybe we should clap after each time someone says something.
Okay, so Susan, let's hear from you, and then let's break. But really, you know, those tables do go into squares. So let's just make one big table, and at least we don't have much time. But
it's just going like that. I don't think we should force it.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Of course. I don't think we should force it.
I don't think so. I think Susan just wants to be.
She likes to be honest.
Susan, wait.
Yeah, pressure, honestly.
No,
you
can define that word.
But that's what we're talking about. When it's first person experience, we're talking about.
Tell us how you feel.
It's not talk we do easily in our
meeting. It's a rare moment when you see her.
It better be good now, seriously.
To relax a little bit, yeah.
Just think of the final word.
Joy. There you are, there's the final word.
Oh.
All right. Okay.